Mentioned it earlier, I'll mention it again, this quote from the Ravens defensive coordinator, Don Wink Martindale. Is that his actual nickname, by the way?
Wink, yeah, Wink.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, that's his nickname, Wink.
Solid game show reference from the 70s and 80s. That is solid. Don Wink Martindale. On dealing with Cliff Kingsbury's scheme, quote, the offensive guys in this league have been stealing plays from him for years from Texas Tech. We're just getting the full Monty, close quote.
The full Monty.
Yeah, the full Monty. The entire Cliff Kingsbury experience, which in part, we've talked about this a lot, 10 personnel, 4 wide receivers on the field, play fast, play with tempo. Cliff Kingsbury on Monday was asked if his pace on offense tired out the Lions defense.
I'm not sure. I think it was a lot of plays for both sides when you throw in overtime. But I think first game, everybody's going to get used to conditioning, particularly their D-line. I don't think had played in the preseason, and so they were getting used to game conditions as well. So I think there were a lot of factors, but it was a lot of plays.
When it comes to pace, I know you were kind of at the forefront of this back when training camp started about how fast they would play and how often they would play with pace. And you've got some good numbers when you kind of look at the pace at which the Cardinals played on Sunday. Go over a few of those, if you would.
They led the entire NFL in raw pace per snap, 22.8 seconds. So their average play was 22.8 seconds. That's a little bit faster than even Chip Kelly. And there were certain times in the game when they were playing even a lot faster than that. They huddled up a few times in the first half. Remember the TV timeouts? They stood on the sidelines. We always noticed they were standing on the sidelines because they don't want to let the opponent know what their personnel is. They don't want to know what package they're in. So that's why they huddled up on the sidelines. I've never seen that before. So that was the first time for me. But their pace at 22.8. The next highest pace was the Carolina Panthers at 25.1. So that's 23 seconds. 2.3 seconds more.
2 or 3, yeah.
The Giants were then at 25.2, the Dolphins at 25.4, and the Redskins at 26. But the Cardinals did have the fastest pace per snap at 22.8 seconds. That's the average. Obviously, there was some that was a little bit more, and there were obviously some that were a little bit less. They were getting some plays off in that 16, 17, 18 second range when they were having success. When they weren't having success, you were seeing them take a little bit longer off the clock. When they had success, you see them no huddle, get quick to the line, and get the play off. Now, the slowest teams in the league, and they're going to see one of them this week, the Ravens were one of the slowest teams in the league. But the Vikings were the slowest at 36.5.
Well, did you see why?
Why the Vikings were the slowest?
Kirk Cousins threw the ball 10 times.
Yeah, everything was a handoff.
Kirk Cousins had 10 pass attempts. That doesn't mean, that's not an indicator necessarily of playing slow, but obviously that's an indicator of philosophy and how you want to play. He threw the ball 10 times in that game.
Jaguars with 34.5. The Ravens with 33 seconds. The Chargers 32.8. The Packers 32.7. Those were the 5 slowest teams. So in a nutshell, the Arizona Cardinals had the fastest pace in the entire NFL at an average of 22.8 seconds per snap.
I wonder if that'll hold. I wonder if that, it's, and I don't know the answer to this question. I'm just kind of guessing and wondering out loud. When we get to the end of the season, is that what it's going to be? Is it going to be, is their average going to be faster? Is it going to get faster the more comfortable they get? I don't think it'll get slower.
They will play with pace at times, and there's other times they're going to slow it down. But there will be times when you're going to see them go every 16, 17 seconds. And they may go an entire drive, 10 plays, and just try to run the other team, you know, run them into the ground, tire them out. And then it may be some times if they've had 2, 3 and outs in a row, where they might be like, okay, listen, I got to give the defense a little bit of a rest. We're gonna huddle up on this play. We're going to take a little bit longer. Because, I mean, obviously they want to play fast. It's a key to the air raid offense. But there are times that dictate that you need to play a little bit slower. So from what I'm hearing is, yes, the pace is going to continue to be like this, but there will be times that they slow it down a little bit. But they did have the fastest pace in the National Football
League. One of the talking points around practice today for the Cardinals as they get ready for the Ravens was the need to be
more balanced, right? 10 personnel. They threw the ball a lot. They ran the ball out of 10 personnel quite a bit. But as Cliff Kingsbury said on Sunday and again on Monday, when you're down 24-6 in the fourth quarter, you kind of chuck your game plan out the window and you have to throw the ball a lot. Larry Fitzgerald, count him among those who believe the Cardinals will need to have a more balanced offense on Sunday.
We're going to see a lot more pressure than we saw last week. They like to bring a lot of blitzes and like to get their guys, you know, after the quarterback and Kyler just being in the second game. And, you know, I just think we're going to see a lot of that, and we're going to have to be able to beat it. And if we can't, you know, we're going to see a lot more of it. And we got to be able to stay balanced in terms of our rushing attack and getting David and Chase the ball in the run game. And hopefully we can find some creases and, you know, make some plays in the run game and the passing. But we got to be balanced, though, against this team.
David Johnson was asked the same question. Do you expect the offense to be more balanced this week?
It really just comes up to, you know, what they're offering us. And, you know, obviously running it more would be, in my opinion, me being a little biased would be good for, you know, for the offense. But I know Coach Cliff and everyone in the offensive staff knows what to do. It's really all up to scenario.
It will be scenario. They'll have to look at the blitz and how Baltimore uses the blitz. Maybe you play that, you know, that the 10 personnel is no tight end. So maybe they do, you know, play a tight end a little bit so you get that extra blocker in. But David Johnson did a really good job on a blitz pickup. Fitz can block. Crabtree can block. So, you'll see. But I would think against this team, I mean, just gut feeling, I think you'll probably see the tight end play a little bit more against the Ravens.
Yeah, well, I mean, Cliff has already said, and we talked about this a lot yesterday, you know, the use of the 10 personnel, the one running back and the zero tight end, was an anomaly for game one. They won't do that as much as they did. And you and I kind of questioned openly.
Because that's success.
Is that they had success doing it. So is he saying that because he's trying to bluff the Ravens into thinking that he's not going to use it when he actually is going to use it 67% of the time like he did the other day? Or is he going to not use it that much? It does present. I mean, look, you talk about the pace of play, right? And how fast Kyler Murray can get the ball out of his hands. If you're going to go 10 personnel and you want to beat the pass rush, that's what you have to do. You have to get the ball out quick, quick, quick.
They want him to get it out a little bit quicker than he's getting it out. He got rid of the ball at an average of 2.68 seconds. They want to get that down to around 2.5 seconds. Not that far away, but the whole object of the air raid offense is getting rid of the ball quickly. Getting rid of it very quickly. So they want the ball out at 2.5. He averaged 2.68. So he's not that far off.
Yeah.
But they're still hoping to get work with him to get it out just a little bit quicker.
But if it comes down to, okay, a four wide receiver set against Baltimore and they're going to bring the house and blitz.
Yeah, you're getting rid of it.
You got to get that ball out fast, right? It's got to come real, real fast, because if it doesn't, you're going to be screwed with the.
But that's all identifying the blitz. And that's where like a veteran like A.Q. Shipley comes in big time. You know, a center that could look and sit there and help the quarterback identify what he sees because he's been in the league for a long time. The key to the blitz, you got to hit the guy that, you know, wherever he's blitzing from, is going to be somebody open quickly. Now it's going to close because the linebacker or a safety is going to converge on that guy. So there's something that's open very quickly with the blitz, but it closes. So it's up to Murray to identify that and hit that quick. Usually it's a quick slant.
My hunch, this is just my hunch,
yeah,
is that we're going to see a lot of 10 personnel again on Sunday. That's just my hunch. I think we're going to see a lot of it.
You got an over-under on percentage? What were
they? Oh, boy.
67% in the first game?
Is that what I said? Yeah, I said 67%.
You think they stay around that percentage?
Okay. since I'm the over-under master here. And you call me that. I don't call myself that. I think they'll play 10 personnel. I'm going to set the over-under at 58.5% of the time.
Okay.
58.5%. I'm going to write that down. 58.5%. Got the over or the under. So just over half the time, I think they'll be in 10 personnel, four wide receivers.
58.5.
They did it 67% of the time against the
Lions. I'll go over.
You're going to go the over on that.
Wow. I'll go with the over. Crabtree's coming in. Yeah, which we will, which
Michael
we will,
Crabtree,
which we will talk about coming up in a little later. Join Kevin McCabe and AZ Preps live on Saturday from 9 to 11 a.m. is the Chick-fil-A just east of the 101 in Shea in Scottsdale.
Oh, I love Chick-fil-A.
Going to have the chance to win free Chick-fil-A for a year, so you should go if you like it that much. Phoenix Rising tickets, ASU tickets, and more will also be available at this roadshow. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details. The Chick-fil-A High School Football Roadshow Series just east of the 101 and Shea in Scottsdale. The Baltimore media, not giving the Cardinals a chance, and considering Arizona's East Coast history, just how out of hand could this get on Sunday? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. For the purposes of this conversation, we're going to define a blowout, and we have Jordan Bird to thank for this definition. We're going to define a blowout, three scores or more. So basically
17 points.
17 points.
I'll buy that.
Okay.
I buy it.
That's a blowout. Are the Cardinals going to get blown out on Sunday? Are they walking into a potential blowout situation on Sunday? And part of the spark for this conversation, you were tooling around the old World Wide Web this morning, came across a story on the Baltimore Sun. Now, keep in mind, these are Baltimore sports writers, and I'm not saying they're being homers necessarily.
Homers.
We all try to be as objective as we can, so I'm going to trust
them.
That they're trying
Baltimore
to be objective. The editor of the Baltimore Sun, Ravens 34, Cardinals 13. Another editor of the Baltimore Sun, Ravens 35, Cardinals 17. Reporter, Daniel Afusi, Ravens 27, Cardinals 10. Mike Preston, a columnist, believes it's going to be close, 21-14, the Ravens win. Peter Schmuck, columnist, Ravens 31, Cardinals 20.
How many of those are blowouts?
You got
a couple more you got to read. Okay. I've reached my monthly free article limit.
I believe I just did too.
So
I think I can get
unlimited digital access to the Baltimore Sun 4 weeks for 99 cents.
Did you hear that? I think I just slammed into the paywall on the Baltimore Sun's website. I can't see anymore.
I just got a message from the Baltimore Sun. You've reached your monthly free article limit. Subscribe.
Oh. Okay, so we're counting 17 as a blowout? Right?
Yeah.
17?
Well, two or more. So 16 would be a blowout. 15 would be a... Well, no, 15 is two scores. 16 or more.
Okay. 1, 2, 3. 3. 3 of the 7 say it's going to be a blowout.
Okay.
I got one who says it's going to be a 14-point game. I got one who says it's going to be a 15-point game.
I tricked the son of a guns. I just went to like Firefox.
How to beat the paywall
about
by John
Gambadoro. I just figured out how to beat the paywall.
11. Yeah, we got three. I got three of the seven who say it's going to be 16 or more. And a lot of the reason why, and we talked about this yesterday, people will cite the Cardinals' record in East Coast games since 2016. It's 1-8. And I think I'm gonna do this during Thursday Night Football tonight. I'm gonna go back and just look in the last few years. The average margin of defeat in those games, it's like 2 touchdowns. It's 13 points.
Right.
Then you combine the fact that Kyler Murray's making his first road start, that the Ravens looked so good against the Miami Dolphins, apparently regardless of how bad the Dolphins actually are, the fact that they laid 59 on Miami, and a lot of people seem to think this is gonna be some sort of a blowout. In fact, David Johnson was even asked about the 1-8 East Coast record today after practice.
Honestly, I didn't know that. I didn't even know that was a stat, and I think we're just going to come out. That's nothing that we're even thinking about. We're just going to come out and, you know, play Cardinals football and try to start out faster as an offense.
Well, you're thinking about it now because some reporter just asked you about it. You're thinking about it now.
I got a kick out of this, too. I don't know if you agree with this or not, but they did a here's who has the edge on offense, defense, special teams in Sunday's Week 2 game. Ravens passing game. They give the edge to the Ravens. Said quarterback Lamar Jackson can't pass any more efficiently than he did in the team's season opening win against Miami. 324 yards, 5 touchdowns. Jackson faced questions about his accuracy as a rookie, but for now, those questions are on hold. So they give the edge to the Ravens.
Okay.
And over the Cardinals. Then they get to the running game. Mark Ingram's Ravens debut was overshadowed by Jackson's performance, but the veteran running back blasted through the line for 49 yards on his first carry and finished with 107 yards and 2 touchdowns on just 14 carries overall. Gus Edwards
had 56 yards on 17 carries in the opener, and they got rookie Justice Hill. They talk about David Johnson had a down season last year and then what he did this year, but they give the edge to the Ravens.
Okay.
So over so
passing
David
game
Johnson.
Edge, rushing yeah. game edge. Okay.
Rush defense. The Ravens smothered Miami's running game in the opener, allowed just 21 yards on 12 carries. Cards held the Lions to a relatively inefficient 116 yards on 32 carries. Edge Ravens. Pass defense. Ravens harassed Dolphins quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick into 14 for 29 performance. Did find some openings down the field. Jimmy Smith left with a knee sprain. I don't think he's going to play this week. So they talked about them. Then said the Cardinals pass defense. And obviously they mentioned Patrick Peterson being out and Alford being out. So edge Ravens. Special teams. Ravens gained 60 yards on a fake punt. Recovered a muffed punt against the Dolphins. And Cardinals, and they mentioned Zane Gonzalez. And they say edge Ravens. Intangibles. Ravens could be riding higher than their record-setting demolition of the Dolphins. They've usually dominated rookie quarterbacks at home, and Harbaugh always has his team ready to play early in the season with a 17-2 home record in September over the last 11 years. So that was the one I wanted to get out there. Harbaugh's 17-2 at home in September. Edge Ravens. Every single edge they give to the Ravens. Every offensive edge, every defensive edge, every special teams edge, everything they give to the Ravens. Coaching edge, they give all the edges to the Ravens. They don't give the Cardinals one edge. I would think, nothing against Mark Ingram, I would think that David Johnson, after the game he had last week, I would think the edge would go to the Cardinals in running the football.
If you're going
to
pick one, I think that'd be the one.
That would
pick.
Be the one.
I think that would be the one you'd pick. I would agree. But I think Baltimore is a much better football team than the Arizona Cardinals are.
They are. They're going to win.
I mean, I think they're...
I'm not going to pick the Cardinals to win this game.
I think all of those matchups... I think the flaw is, and here's what I truly believe. If you want to think Baltimore is a better team than the Arizona Cardinals, knock yourself out. I think they are, too. Okay? I think they've got better talent. They were in the playoffs. They're home. Kyler Murray's making his first road start. All that stuff. But if you're going to build your argument on the Ravens being better than the Cardinals off of what they did to Miami, your argument is flawed. Flawed.
Because it's Miami. I don't disagree.
So I'm gonna buy Miami's a better football team. I'm going to buy that there is a chance, a decent chance, the Arizona Cardinals come back from Baltimore having lost that game by 17 or more points, therefore qualifying as a blowout. I'm going to buy all that stuff. But if you're going to try to convince me that it's going to happen because the Ravens did what they did to the Dolphins, I'm going to reject that argument out of hand. That does not matter to me because the Dolphins are actively trying to lose football games. Their players aren't, but that front office is, all right? That front office is actively trying to lose football games. So I'm not going to, wow, did you see what they did to Miami last week? Yeah, did you see what Miami's doing to Miami every single week, every single day? Don't use that as your argument. The roster, yes. The matchups, all of that. I think the Cardinals, I'm nervous for Kyler Murray this weekend.
Can the game not be over at halftime? I'll consider that a victory. Can the game not be over at halftime? Can they play into the third or fourth quarter with a chance to be in the game? Can it be? This is, you know, this is one of the themes we talked about a lot, was just to be more competitive.
Yes.
You could lose this football game and be more competitive.
Sure.
Nothing wrong with that. You're not going to win all these games. Cardinals aren't going undefeated this year.
That's an excellent point. And I think that's something that now suddenly is going to vault to the top of my list of things that I'm going to be watching for on Sunday.
Can you be competitive?
Can you be competitive in this game?
Hang around?
Because we saw too many times last year where games were over by halftime.
Halftime. Too many. 7 or 8. It's crazy.
If this is not one of those games, I'll feel pretty good about it. I mean,
you go into the fourth quarter and the Cardinals are 10 down going into the fourth quarter, you're in the game.
Yeah.
You're in the game.
We all know what it looks like, right? We saw it plenty of times last year. Don't get humiliated. We all know what humiliation looks like. It happened to the Cardinals.
Broncos,
way
the Rams,
too many times.
Right. Yeah, a lot of games.
Don't have one of those games. And if I'm not saying I'm going to be satisfied with mediocrity or satisfied with a 10-point loss, but if we're looking for growth, if we're looking for improvement, don't get humiliated. I'm with you. Go into the fourth quarter, giving yourself at least a puncher's chance to get back in that game, and don't be embarrassed with getting blown out the building by halftime. I'd actually feel decent about that.
I didn't look at the line. I mean, we don't look at it this way because we're not expecting it. If the Cardinals were to pull off the upset, I mean, I can't imagine it wouldn't be the biggest upset of week 2.
Oh, I'm sure it's the biggest point spread of. I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and check the lines. Just to
do they sure. have a shock the world game in them this year?
Hmm.
Do they have one?
It is only week two. One NFL team is already falling apart at the seams. We'll talk about that coming up in the Burns and Gambo Show. Wow. Who did the Jets?
Oh, man.
Anger.
My friends are so mad right now. Joe, my buddy Joe Cofaro. So now Darnold has mono, and he's out until at least week five. Looks like a top two pick in the draft. What is going on with the Jets? My buddy Craig, unreal. Bobby, I think he was making out with Cheryl Fassine in study hall. That's how this mono stuff happens. Like this is what this...
These are the people you hang out with.
My friends. Yeah, I got a friends group. Yeah, I got a friend group.
He was making out with who?
Cheryl Fassine.
Okay.
That's Bobby. I think he's making out with Cheryl Fassine in study hall. That's how that stuff, that mono stuff happens. Yeah.
Aren't you happy to be hanging out with me every single day instead of those clowns? I swear.
I miss those clowns. You know, I have no friends here. Like, the truth, I really don't have no friends. I had friends there. Like, I had friends. I was popular. Here, I have no friends.
Oh, you're popular. I don't know if you have friends, but you're popular here. There's no doubt about that.
I have no friends. So I do miss these stew nods. Making out with Cheryl Fassine in study hall. That's how this stuff happens. Yeah.
One of these days, I'm going to find out what a stew nod is. I'm afraid to ask what a stew nod is, but for now.
They're so upset that Sam Darnold's out. They're like, oh, God.
Here's Adam Gase today breaking the news that Sam Darnold has mono and won't play.
They're doing all these tests on him and things like that and kind of figuring out the best protocol. I know his biggest concern is weight loss. He's already lost. That was something that was alarming to him, that he lost some weight already in the last couple days. So, you know, he's right away, he went into, all right, hey, I have to make sure I'm getting meals over, because he can't be in the building right now. So he's like, I need to get meals over here. I need to make sure that I'm getting enough of what I need to keep my weight. I mean, he went right into, all right, how do I maintain?
He's quarantined.
Yeah.
He's been quarantined in his own apartment. He's having meals delivered to him in his own apartment.
Yeah,
it's mono. Just... And any parent of a kid who's had mono, anybody who's ever had mono
a kissing
knows
disease. Yeah.
It takes a while before you feel better. I mean, it just kicks your butt. So he's got that. The Jets, who, I mean, they're already in a salty mood in New York about the Jets because they had a 16-point lead against the Bills and blew it the way they did. It gets even worse if that's possible. Here's Jets reporter Rich Cimini on ESPN.
Yeah, Adam Gase said today we're running out of bodies. The big news is Le'Veon Bell. He's getting an MRI this afternoon. They're calling it shoulder soreness. Gase did not seem alarmed by it, but yet when a player goes for an MRI, there has to be some concern there. That would be a crushing blow for this team because they're going to be relying on Bell more than ever with the quarterback change. C.J. Mosley and Quinnen Williams also dealing with injuries, not practicing today. And of course, let's not forget about Demaryius Thomas. Just comes over in a trade. He's got a hamstring injury, not practicing, but he will play Monday. It's constant for the Jets. They're just off to a really unlucky start in terms of the injuries.
Now, the report did come in on Le'Veon Bell. The MRI revealed no major damage or tears, according to sources to ESPN. The test, was mostly precautionary. So at least there's good news there.
The bad news, you know who's playing quarterback for him?
Trevor Siemian. Last time he played a game? 2017.
The quarterback is Trevor Siemian.
He was backing up Cousins last year in Minnesota, and he didn't get in a game. So the last time Trevor Siemian has thrown a pass in the National Football League was 2017. That long ago.
Ugh.
So that's your starting quarterback if you're
Trevor Siemian.
And listen to this. I took a screenshot of this. Okay, to your point about Siemian being the starting quarterback. Here's Adam. This is from Mike Sando's Twitter account. I took a screen grab of this morning. Adam Gase's quarterback timeline in 50 games as a head coach in this league. Tannehill for 13 starts.
Sucks.
Matt Moore for 4.
Sucks.
Jay Cutler for 6.
Sucks.
Matt Moore for 1.
Sucks.
Back to Cutler for 3.
Sucks.
Moore for 1.
Yeah.
Jay Cutler for 5.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Tannehill for 5. Brock Osweiler for 5.
Sucks.
Ryan Tannehill for 6. Sam Darnold for 1. Trevor Siemian ?
Wow.
That's Adam Gase's track record of the quarterbacks he's had the opportunity to coach in 50 regular season games or playoff games as a head coach in this league.
Praise to God every night. What did I do to deserve this? Like, really? Well, can I have one quarterback, just one, all these years? Could I have one?
The problem is you're looking up at the sky when you do that. Adam Gase can't do that, is it?
Oh. Googly eyes.
His eyes are turned all over the place.
Can't look up at the sky.
He can't hold his eyes up there.
Somebody say a prayer for him.
You know what?
My God, Trevor Siemian's the quarterback for the Jets.
I'm going to say a prayer for him. There's something about the Jets. There's something about the Jets that is just. And listen to this.
They haven't had a good quarterback since Kenny O'Brien. That's the truth. They haven't had a good quarterback since Kenny O'Brien.
Along those same lines, the Patriots are going to play the Jets. So they've got the Browns on Monday Night Football. The Browns are going to be salty after losing in Week 1 of Tennessee, right?
Yes.
They got the Browns on Monday Night Football, no Darnold. After that, they have the Patriots. Listen to this from the Patriots reporter, Ben Valin, who tweeted this out. The Patriots face the tanking Miami Dolphins this week, followed by the Sam Darnold-less Jets at home, then Buffalo, at Washington, versus the Giants, and at the Jets. Might be the softest opening schedule in the NFL. They play nobody in the first month and a half of the season.
But the AFC East, I mean, like, at some point, like, what a joke.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I know they're all trying, right? Buffalo drafted Josh Allen, and the Jets drafted Darnold, and Miami traded for Rosen. I mean, these were all first-round picks.
Yep.
These were all first-round picks last year. They're trying to compete with New England, and just haven't been able to. I mean, New England is that much of a juggernaut. I mean, look what they did to the Steelers, you know, on Monday night. That was unbelievable. And now it looks like Antonio Brown's going to make his Patriots debut in Week 2, according to NFL.com. All signs point to him, the fact he's going to be on the field in Miami this weekend when they play the Dolphins. They've had two practices this week. He's been on the field for both.
Yeah.
So he is expected to play in that game.
Yeah, there's been no new word about that. I read a story this morning on ProFootballTalk.com which suggested that they kind of looked at the rule book, the personal conduct policy, and said, look, if Roger Goodell wanted to, he could probably get away with suspending him. He even suggested there might be like a backroom conversation between the league and the Patriots about
him.
It doesn't sound like they're going to. It sounds like he's going to go ahead and play, but then we'll see what happens next week when the NFL has a chance to talk to Brown's accuser.
We're going
to
do the investigation
and see what happens after that. But yeah, I read the same story as you did, that the expectation is that he is going to play against the Miami Dolphins, which, by the way, that is the largest point spread game of any week two game.
So that would be the biggest upset.
Not Cardinals-Ravens. It would be if the Dolphins were to somehow beat the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I did see sexual assault allegations made against Antonio Brown are not being investigated. A Pennsylvania district attorney's office clarified Wednesday, a day after the bombshell lawsuit against the wide receiver.
He's not being investigated?
Allegheny County District Attorney Stephen Zappala will not be looking into the allegations made against.
It was reported yesterday that he was going to. Yeah, it was reported yesterday that there would be a criminal investigation. That's an interesting change on that. And then, of course, Thursday Night Football tonight, a game that I am kind of curious to see.
Are you?
Because it's Bruce. Because it's Bruce, and they were terrible in Week 1. What did he fix? What did he tinker with? What did he go back with Jameis Winston? With his three interceptions and his two pick sixes and his three other balls that very easily could have been intercepted, what did the quarterback whisperer whisper to Jameis Winston to get him to play a better game tonight? Or does he play a better game tonight? Because if he's as bad as he was in Week 1...
What are those fans going to think if they start 0-2 and they get shellacked in both games?
And what are those fans going to think if they start 0-2?
With Bruce Arians.
Yep.
Panthers are favored by 7 in this game.
It's my affinity for Bruce Arians that has me really drawn into tonight's game. Because I want him to do well.
By the way, let's not forget that Bruce Arians did not fare very well against Carolina when he played them. That was the one team that would kick his ass when he was here. He's lost his last three games as the head coach of the Cardinals against Carolina by a combined 56 points.
Wow.
Yeah. Last three times he played Carolina as the head coach here, he got slaughtered in those games. He lost by 56 points in three games.
Joe Rogan just announced a third show for his highly anticipated comedy tour coming to Comerica Theater on December 7th. Tickets go on sale tomorrow at 11. You can win a pair right now by visiting the rewards page at arizonasports.com. More likely than not, the Cardinals are going to have another high pick in next year's draft. That position could benefit the Cardinals in multiple ways, and we'll explain next on the Burns and Gambo Show. I don't know if I'm comfortable with this next conversation. Okay.
do you even know what conversation we're about to have?
Yeah, of course. Potential top picks in the draft next year.
Feels weird talking about that 1 week into the NFL season.
Sure, especially when you didn't even lose your first game.
I know, right? I mean, you're undefeated so far. We're going to have a conversation about what could be a top 10 pick for the Arizona Cardinals. Let's be honest about it. That's what we're expecting, right?
Well, I thought about this. There was a story on ESPN by Matt Bowen.
Yes.
And it said, meet the candidates for the number one pick in the 2020 draft and how they dominate. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, and my first initial thought is going to be what everybody else is. Who are the Miami Dolphins going to get?
Right.
You know, and obviously the elite quarterbacks, you got Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama, and then you've got Justin Herbert from Oregon. And then, you know, there's playmakers, the Judy kid from Alabama, the wide receiver, and then they start to get into, you know, pass rushers, Chase Young, the defensive end out of Ohio State, and A.J. Epenesa from Iowa, the defensive end, and then Derek Brown, the defensive tackle from Auburn, and then offensive lineman. They got this kid, Tristan Wirfs from Iowa, 6'5", 322, and Andrew Thomas from Georgia. And then they just start listing all these players. I'm like, oh, wow. I mean, that's like, okay. Like, that's some really good, you know, Jake Fromm, the quarterback from Georgia, and
sure,
Easton,
sure,
the quarterback from Washington. So my initial thought is, who are the Miami Dolphins going to get? And then I start to think, like I'm not expecting the Cardinals to go 9-7. I'm expecting them to win six games and, you know, probably be in a position to get a really good pick. But if things went south on them, man, I don't want this to happen, but for a second I thought, man, if they had a top five pick, they had ability to, a team wants one of those stud quarterbacks,
yeah.
I mean, they might be in a position to get a windfall right there. Again, not rooting for it, but crossed my mind for a second if things didn't go well this year. Look, the Cardinals are going to have a high pick in the draft next year. They're not winning 9-10 games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they win six games, they're probably still going to have a pick around, 9-10, 11-12.
If they win six games?
They win six, they're picking
12. Pick anywhere between 8th and 12th.
Okay.
Yeah, I would think.
All right, yeah.
I'd have to look back at last year's draft, but I think a 6-10 team gets you anywhere from the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th pick, somewhere around there. Yeah. Look, there's... If we're being realistic about it, I mean, you've got them at 6-10. I've got them at 5-11. I mean, it's.
But some people don't. Some people don't think this team's going to win five football games. Some people think they're going to win three or four. Vegas doesn't have them winning a whole lot of games. I don't know if I got what the over-under was. But, I mean, just for a second across my mind, they might be in a position to get themselves either a great, like one of the best offensive linemen in the draft, or one of the best defensive ends in the draft, or defensive tackles, or maybe trade if there's a quarterback there. So, you know, if things, I don't want to look too far ahead either, but I was just, again, I crossed my mind because I just looked at the quarterbacks and who Miami could get, because the quarterbacks, there's a lot of, I mean, McShay's rank on Tua is number one. His rank on Justin Herbert is 7. So he's got two guys in his top 7 that are quarterbacks right now.
Mm-hmm.
Two in his top 7. And, you know, others could jump into that category. So as you know, we talk about this all. Quarterbacks are going to move up.
Of course.
Quarterbacks are going to move up.
No, I mean, the ideal situation is the Cardinals are better than everybody gives them credit for, and they're more competitive than we give them credit for, and we don't have to talk about this at the end of the season. But if things go as, for lack of a better word, planned, and the Cardinals do have a top 10, top 12 pick, the ideal scenario would be that they are in a position to, if a team wants to move up to get the third quarterback out of this year's class, right? The second quarterback out of this year's class. Maybe not the first quarterback, because that's probably going to go to Miami, number one overall. But if the Cardinals can put themselves in a position where their draft spot becomes coveted enough that they can leverage that spot to get multiple picks, move down, fill multiple roles, make multiple first-round picks, get future first, seconds, whatever the case may be. I mean, that's ideal. I think what's not ideal is that if they're bad enough that they have a top three or top four pick, that's going to raise questions about the whole infrastructure of the Arizona. If we're talking about another season where they're 4-12,
yeah, you wonder who's going to make
13,
that pick.
You do wonder who's going to make that pick. I don't know, and I'm being honest.
They need to show improvement.
I don't know if Steve Keim can afford another 3-13 season. another four. I don't know who's making that pick.
When we
if
say
they go 3-13 or 4-12,
when we say that they've got 2 years to kind of, you know, for this, it's not just a 1 year thing. I just, you know, is that everybody? Does everybody get 2 years to kind of make this work? Does it need any more time to get the right players in this system? With the amount of turnover that they had this year, it's going to be more turnover next year. I mean, it is a work in progress. I mean, not everything's going to be settled in 1 year. That, okay, here it is. They installed it and it's going to be great. I mean, it might take 2 or 3 years before the Cardinals. They're married to this for a while.
Yes.
Like, there's no way they're firing the head coach and the staff after 1 year. I don't see that happening. You don't see it happening. Stranger things have happened, but I highly doubt that they wouldn't be that they wouldn't give this 2 or 3 years to see if they could get this off the ground.
Well, I do think the path that they've chosen in hiring Cliff Kingsbury and drafting Kyler Murray would make it awfully difficult at that, because what you would have to do, again, talking purely hypothetically here, okay, you get to the end of the year, it's been a lousy season for the Arizona Cardinals, all right, and you want to move on from the general manager. You'd have to hire a new general manager who's on board with Cliff Kingsbury as his coach and Kyler Murray as his quarterback.
Yeah, no choice.
And not so much Cliff, all right? You could do a change there if you wanted to. It'd be a really bad look firing Wilkes after 1 year. But with Kyler, you're married to that for a while. All right.
So you're married to Cliff.
And I think
Cliff
because
and Kyler go hand in hand.
And I think because of that, you're married to Cliff for at least a little while until Kyler gets himself established
this
league. I don't know if that means you're married. But what you'd have to do is, if you moved on from Keim, you'd have to find a general manager who believes in the vision of Kyler and Cliff and what they're trying to do here, and who would continue giving them the parts and pieces they need. Otherwise, the whole thing's been a waste
of time.
You're
not hiring Rex Ryan to be the general manager of the team.
That'd be a big negative ghostwriter. Yeah, you're not doing that.
I think a lot of it depends on how these draft picks pan out. I mean, if Kyler pans out, and if Zach Allen pans out, and if Keyshawn Johnson pans out, and if a lot of these draft picks pan out and play well, like that might bode well. The most important thing is to improve, be competitive. But I do think there is something to be said for winning more games than last year by 2 or 3. Like that, because that will show the improvement. Hey, we're on the verge where we're making progress. 3-13, even though you might look at it and say, okay, we're improved. You know, we were more competitive in games. Man, you only won 3 games again. So I think that they've got to win 5 or 6 games. And show some progress and have some of these draft picks play well to kind of keep everything on that path next year.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
But if it doesn't, they can be in a position to make a trade.
They could. But I'm not rooting for that, and I don't think you are either.
No.
Not yet, anyway. I mean, talk to me at the end of the season, and we'll see where things stand. But for right now, I'm not sitting here rooting
you're
for
not
draft
a
picks.
The Dolphin fans are. If you're a Dolphin fan right now, you're watching every game that Tagovailoa and Urban and those guys play, because you want to see who you're going
to
get.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, another gigantic loss to the New York Mets, and it's got a lot of us around here thinking that might be that. And that's next on the Burns and Gambo show.